Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, I'm Paco Romain.
And I'm George Chen. And you're listening to SubDoc.
We talk to people from the world of music, comedy, TV, and film about their favorite documentaries.
And it's the second anniversary of the show. What better way to mark the occasion than by wrapping up our Mayhem True Crime series and going back to the vaults?
Back in May of 2015, when I came up with the idea for the show, we wanted to test the concept, so we met up with the very funny comedian, writer, Chobani spokesman, and Bone Thugs and Harmony cover artist, Matt Lieb, about HBO's six-part true crime series, The Jinx.
The Jinx is a groundbreaking series directed by Andrew Jarecki that follows Robert Durst, a real estate heir suspected in the unsolved 1982 disappearance of his wife, Kathy, as well as the murders of his friends, Susan Berman and Morris Black. With friends like these, who needs enemies? Revelations and surprises abound, and the ending has become iconic ever since we recorded this.
Oh, I think they know what I've done. Oh. This is one of our most popular episodes, and you can see Matt Lieb all the time on AJ Plus Newsbroke. And now, here's episode one of SupDoc.
So, Matt Lieb is a San Francisco comedian.
Yes.
And runs a great show on Thursdays at Lost Weekend Video.
Yeah.
Mission Position.
The Mission Position.
And
when
I put out this word like, hey, who has really strong opinions on Jinx? And like Jessica Seeley was like, Matt Lieb.
Yeah, yeah. And I was glad she said that because it's absolutely true. I forced her to watch. Oh, that sounds weird. I didn't force her to watch it. Didn't hold a gun to her head. But I was like, have you seen The Jinx yet? And I had just finished watching it.
Right.
So I'd seen it the very last episode and everything that happens, you know, subsequently. And I was like, have you seen The Jinx? And she said, no, I don't have HBO Go. And I was like, here is my password and login, aka my parents' password and login.
And what is the?
Yeah, watch it immediately.
Don't you need to tell us the login? Just tell us the password.
Yeah, you guys want to know?
Yeah,
yeah.
You're going to know the password.
This is maybe when we're off, when we're not okay, recording, but I'll give it to you guys. I really will. It's unlimited logins. Do you guys not, honestly? Do you not have?
No, I have another comedian's password.
Okay, okay, good.
Because I don't. I have no one's password.
Well, so how did you watch The Jinx?
I got ways.
All right. Okay.
Maybe.
You got your ways out.
Yeah, I got my ways out.
You got directions to the internet piracy. So we should say spoiler alert.
Yes.
For everyone, don't listen past this point if you have not finished watching The Jinx.
We'll count down from two, one. Now listen.
Bruce Willis is dead the whole time.
Yes, he was.
Bruce Willis was the Jinx the whole time.
Robert Durst, Bruce Willis, samesies.
Same dude. Yeah.
Same dude. So so tell us, Matt, like, first, like, I love Jinx.
Yeah.
All of them. All the incredible weirdness that that guy has. I mean, just think of the stuff that no one knows about.
Right.
About Robert Durst.
Yeah.
So what compelled you? What compelled you to watch it and want to talk about it?
Well, what compelled me to watch it was people saying you need to watch it. And at the time, I think
further.
Oh, this way?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. I'm too loud. All right. At the time that it was on the air, like three episodes had already passed and I wasn't interested. I wasn't going to watch it. And then, I believe somebody, then equated it to Serial, and was like, did you like Serial? And I was like, well, yeah, it's problematic, but yeah, sure. I like it. And then he's like, well, you're going to love it. It's true crime. It's great. It's about a rich guy who gets away with murder. And I was like, oh, that's like my favorite thing, you know, like the idea of like, let's shame this, you know, one percenter. Mm-hmm. And let's, you know, I don't know. It seemed very interesting to me. And then as soon as I started watching it, I was immediately like, oh, this is going to be epic. This is going to, because HBO is nothing but, you know, I don't want this to be like just a commercial for HBO. But this is just quality.
Yeah.
Just our quality. Sponsor.
Please contact us.
Yeah. Please sponsor this podcast.
It's going to be Hats and Belts Outdoors is the company we're going to be.
Yeah.
That HBO.
But I mean, people compared it to Serial. And after watching it, it's like Serial, but if Serial were better.
Now, you can't spoil Serial for me yet, though, because I haven't finished Serial.
Okay, well then.
I'm only two episodes in on that.
Wow. Okay, well, I won't spoil Serial for you then, and I will stop talking about Serial then forever.
No, I mean, we can talk about it. I mean, I tried to write this joke about, like, this weird thing of, like, why are we letting documentaries and podcasts, like, solve our crimes for us? Like,
right.
Where they were outsourcing, like, the job of the cops, and so it's definitely like it is a thing that's happening now, and it's almost like why is this a phenomenon now? Is it people are just really invested in true crime stuff? There always has been people. Mm-hmm. It's just this highbrow true crime stuff,
right?
It's like NPR people doing true crime stuff and HBO doing true crime stuff.
Well,
it's a little highbrow, I think.
I mean, I don't know. It's the annoying thing about it is it's a little bit with Serial. I'll say it's disrespectful. Almost to I don't know if disrespectful is the word. It's a little bit. It annoyed me a little listening to Serial, kind of watching someone play a detective or hearing someone play detective, because I just kept thinking to myself, like every time she would like stumble upon something, she would learn that there's a reason. I remember at one moment she learned a reason why there's like why people go to school to be detectives, why people get trained to be detectives. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, like, it's one thing to play detective on your own and then kind of record the results later. It's a whole nother thing to week by week play detective and make assumptions about certain suspects,
right?
Mm-hmm. And broadcast it to a million people, and I just remember after a while feeling like this seems irresponsible. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but that's my take on that. In terms of like HBO doing it, I'd rather HBO were the police than than actual police, you know, because HBO, they're just quality.
Yeah,
you know,
they do good work.
It's not TV, it's HBO, you know, and it's not the police. It's HBO. Yeah.
We've completely outsourced all crime.
I mean, they're true detectives. They even have a show called True Detective.
That's one thing I noticed about this right when it started, when the credits roll. I'm like, they just did the True Detective season 2.
Yeah,
it's for this.
Yeah, that was kind of. I remember watching that and kind of going, "All right, well, they know who their audience is." They said, "Well, we need to attract the people who watched True Detective and enjoyed it." And in reality, I think, I mean,
we found the real Yellow King, or whatever.
Kind of a little bit. They found the Yellow King. It was, you know, Robert Durst.
So Robert Durst.
You
know?
Spoiler alert on True Detective. Yeah. Also, guys.
So let me ask you. Let's dive into Jinx. For them, so I want to know, like, aside from the ending, which surprised everybody, what did you come away with where you were like, "That's insane! I can't believe that this happened," or what? Like, what did you come away with that surprised you the most, other than the ending?
Well, there's like different levels of surprise. One was I was expecting more corruption to be uncovered because you know, hearing about rich New York real estate family heir murders and gets away with it, you think, okay, well, obviously in the, you know, system there's some corruption here.
Yeah.
But that kind of surprised me that it wasn't really so much that, especially in the case of the murder of Morris Black.
Yeah.
That was literally a case of just, if you have more money for better lawyers, you can get away with shit.
Yes.
And I always figured, you know, yeah, money is one thing, but connections is the real power, you know, like being connected with city governments or state or federal governments, even, you know, having that kind of network is real power. And usually people with that network also are billionaires, you know? Mm-hmm. But in this case, it was, he just was like, he found a couple of rich, of the most expensive lawyers.
Yeah.
He and his crazy ass wife, and hired both of them. And they were, that the most surprising thing, able to convince a jury of 12 people that cutting a body up and
to ignore that,
and throwing it into a lake or a river or the ocean or whatever, is not enough of to kind of rule out that it was self-defense.
Yeah,
like how does that not? It's just like it's insane to me. Like that a jury, 12 people unanimously were like, well, you know, it's not about cutting up the body. It's yeah. about. Was it self-defense? Yeah. And it's like, yeah, but they you can't separate those events.
You wouldn't think they would separate the events, but what
speaking of separating things.
Yeah, exactly. What I think is interesting is I'd been reading that they have him under suspicion for all those women that all those dismembered body parts in Long Island that were washing up on the beach in Long Island. Remember that? They had all these, like, what they think are prostitutes that had been dismembered.
Oh my God.
And started washing up on the beaches of Long Island. In they a certain think it's stretch. Him. They have him under suspicion for it because not that many people are all that great at dismembering bodies, as it turns out.
No, right. Yeah, you kind of have to learn how, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's like a skill. You have maybe to go to trade school.
Just think of the blood alone, you know, you really got to be good at containing a crime scene.
And,
you know, that's a lot of evidence. You're just splattering everywhere.
There's a lot of splatter.
And I heard that he was, you know, he had, what, 8 different dogs named Igor?
The Igor dogs? I've heard about this, but I don't. Okay. Yeah, where did that come out? It was in a story?
It was in, this was in a story that was released about Robert Durst before The Jinx came out. And it was about he is... owned 8 or so different Alaskan Malamutes or Siberian Huskies.
Yeah.
I forget. They kind of look
the same. They're basically the same. Yeah.
All of them have died, and every one of them has been named Igor.
Whoa.
And it is kind of believed that he just... they all died within like a year of him getting them. And so it's believed that he's just was murdering dogs, practicing on murdering... and dismembering, you know, just he's a sociopath. He's like killing. He's like fucking.
And they're probably like expensive purebred dogs that he's killing. He's not even going he's not even getting rescue dogs and dismembering them. I guess that is the opposite of rescuing a dog. If you just
exactly. Right? Yeah.
Like I'm gonna go to the pound. But I don't know what voice I was doing.
Yeah. But at the same time, it is like. That is really funny that, of course, he goes for the purebred dog.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, I'm not just going to get some lame ass.
Malamute is like maybe $400.
Yeah, you got to buy a Malamute. You know, you don't go to the pound and rescue one.
I just thought of a random thing because I started doing that voice. Like, you have a bit, I don't want to give it away too much, but you have a bit where you just reference Red Dragon.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, do you have an interest in just like the morbid serial killer thing?
I definitely do. I am weird when it comes to like stuff like that, and not in a weird, not like, you know, I'm not.
Do you have something to confess right now?
No, I mean,
this is going to be the best podcast.
Yeah, I know.
Ever.
This is where I just admit I'm a murderer to you guys.
Go to the bathroom. The mic's hot.
Yeah, exactly. What did I do?
So like true crime stuff, like fictional. I mean, like I'm like fictional crime stuff too. Uh-huh. But like when I saw the actual body parts in the first like 5 minutes, I was like, this is more than I signed on for. I'm like, wait, I agreed to watch a nonfiction murder documentary, and that's what comes with it.
It's dead people.
It actually gets like less like in your face about that stuff as it goes on.
It's because
like,
it's the only actual. It's the only actual
evidence
body.
They have.
You know, like
Susan.
They have Susan Berman's body, but they didn't really show parts of it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to say I love dead people, but like I really like crimes and people. This is going to sound weird. I like watching people die, but not in like a way that is horrible or whatnot, but like I kind of, when I was, okay, so when I was younger, I accidentally, when we first got the internet at our house, I accidentally stumbled onto like Rotten.com, you know, and I was like, this is horrifying. And Rotten.com is basically just horrible like pictures.
Snuff films and stuff?
No. It's more just like horrible pictures of people in, who were in terrible accidents or videos that were released of people dying. You know, the one senator or state senator?
Oh, yeah.
The guy who shot himself?
In Texas.
Yeah, and then the blood
the
just
neurosis
rushes
Neurosis album
out.
Cover is that basically right. the picture. Yeah.
So like, anyway, so I stumbled onto a video of someone getting hit by a bus. Basically getting decapitated by a bus. It scarred me for like a while. And then later in life, in college, someone downloaded one of those like
Faces of Death.
No, it was like a terrorist video of like them sawing off some dude's head.
You saw it?
Well, they downloaded it. They're like, let's watch it. I was like, all right, I'm not a pussy. I'm going to watch it. And then I watched it and I was once again traumatized by it. And then basically after a while, I was like, something happened where I was like, I need to desensitize myself to this stuff. So I started like occasionally looking at crazy videos. Mm. And now like on a pretty regular basis, I'll look at videos of that I find online of people like, you know, getting hit by cars or like getting like...
You'll like watch like an ISIS beheading.
Yeah,
like,
I've watched all the ISIS beheadings.
Oh, wow.
Well, the thing about those ISIS beheadings, let me just say this.
They can take a note or two from Robert Durst.
Yeah, well, first of all, no, they're surprisingly weak in that they actually don't show... They're very high-quality videos. They have great editors. You know, the people doing production on those are top-notch.
Best you can find.
And they're using HD cameras, which is very impressive. The only problem is they only show the head just at the very beginning of being sawed off, starting with the throat. And at first you're like, oh, God. And then they cut out. They just show the beheaded head on the guy's chest. And I was talking to somebody about, like, why the hell would they do that? Yeah. Show the whole thing. You know, not that I'm weird, I want to see it, but I was like, that surprises me. Yeah. And there's lots of conspiracy theories about it not being real, but it turns out it is a because it's about recruiting. I think if they actually showed the whole thing.
How hard it is to actually do.
Yeah, and like how horrifying it is to hear someone screaming for their life.
Yeah.
They were like, this will not help right. with recruiting. So we'll make it seem more like badass and like whatnot. And like, oh, no one complains. Anyways, point is I watch a lot of people dying. And it's not sexual. That I want to point that out first and foremost.
I'm gonna. I can scratch that off my question. Yeah.
You're not gonna date Matt Levin. Wake up.
Yeah. Like yeah. I'll be like, no. Wouldn't it be hot if you died? No, but I just feel like I really just like weird shit, bloody shit. I don't know. I like people. It's horrible. And I'm probably a bad person because of it. But whatever.
You know. I did get a good idea, which is just have HBO stop ISIS.
Yeah,
and outsource out to them,
dude. Honestly,
they're so much better at everything.
I
than
feel
the
like
cops or the army.
Yeah,
HBO would kill it at stopping ISIS.
Let's not send Vice over there. Though.
No,
I think they're just gonna end up helping recruit people.
Honestly, that's my biggest problem with Vice. Vice is. It's like,
what if Vice was like trying to solve a murder?
Yeah,
like a Vice journalist trying to solve a murder.
Exactly.
You have that video online for the Brokeback Stewart thing
yeah.
where you're basically doing a Vice character,
right?
What's called like
Lice
or something. Lice
video, yeah. And it's basically just me in the Tenderloin, you know, going around looking at all the like poverty and you know all the shit that goes down there. And just trying to make it as much about me as possible, you know, like because that's kind of what they do a little bit with Vice, because it's like I understand they're about the whole Gonzo thing, but like the subject matter is interesting enough without like a Brooklyn hipster being like, oh my God, how crazy it is that I'm here right now.
You realize you've been typecast, though.
I know. I'm like perfect.
You
for
can
it.
Only be that. Oh, you're also the yogurt guy now.
Oh yeah,
he's
I'm
got a
show buddy.
We got a yogurt. Representative right now, so.
Beverly Hills Police Department received a letter in the mail. 1527 Benedict Canyon and the word cadaver.
The police made a big deal out of the idea that you had gone to California around the time that Susan Berman was murdered.
California's a big state.
Susan Berman was found shot dead.
Does it make sense to you that there were people that suspected you of having...
Oh, sure. She was my spokesman. All of a sudden, she's dead. I shut her up.
People were starting to talk about him as a suspect, but it never made sense to me.
Can you think of a reason why somebody might write a note like that?
I can't imagine.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So, getting back to Jinx.
Yeah.
Did you know about Robert Durst before this documentary? Have you heard about him? Did you see the movie?
No, I hadn't seen the movie, but yes, the first thing I had ever heard about Robert Durst was actually only a few months before the release of The Jinx. Because I work in news talk radio, when there's like news, we basically just cover news. He had just been arrested in Houston for going to a CVS or some sort of pharmacy, getting his prescription, and then pissing on the candy in the candy aisle. And he had been arrested for just started peeing on all the candy.
Oh wow.
And I remember reading about him, and they're like, he's this rich guy from New York, from this rich family, and HBO is making a documentary about him. And I was like, well, that's weird, because he's suspected in 3 murders. And I was like, holy fuck, this is an interesting guy. And but then I kind of forgot about it.
Yeah.
And I kind of waited for The Jinx to cover the moment where he got arrested in Houston for pissing on candy. But
they didn't.
They never did. Because there's so pissing much on material.
Candy. Yeah. Pissing on candy.
That's like, there's just so that's much.
A, I mean, the
so
part where he shaves his head and his eyebrows and steals the hoagie. The
sandwich, yeah.
The sandwich and has $40,000 in cash in his car and whatever. He had like 500.
He could have paid for that sandwich so easily.
It's so crazy. Like he is truly interesting. Like he's someone who you really just want to get to know. That's why like the idea, like having Andrew Jarecki interview him was so brilliant because it was like you really got to know the inner workings of his mind through the front he was putting on with those interviews. You know what I mean? Because like he was like, he was so transparent.
He was rehearsed.
He was so rehearsed, so transparent, and he was so good at like
deflecting,
and he was good at making, repeating what sounds like the correct, stuff that wouldn't incriminate him.
Yeah.
And, remember, you're assuming that my wife's dead. She could still be out there.
I don't know where she is.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, was there things that you wish Jarecki had asked that he didn't or shown that he hadn't? Was there something in your mind you're like, God, I really want to know about this, but they didn't really cover very much?
In watching it, I mean, if I watched it again, maybe I might find myself wanting to ask questions that weren't covered. But I've only seen it a couple of times, and I just think Andrew Jarecki, I mean, I hate to like, suck the guy's dick too hard, but he knocked it out of the park in those interviews. Yeah. I mean, not just in the questions he was asking, but also in the shots they were getting to. There's that one shot they get where he's drinking from a glass cup, and you see his teeth through the bottom of the glass. And I'm just like, I fucking love you, HBO. Yeah. They're so good at what they do.
And when he goes to his brother's home, walks up the stairs and stuff, and you're just like, this guy is nuts.
Yeah,
he has his backpack, and you're just like, what's in the backpack? What's he capable of doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
seems like he's capable of just about anything.
Yeah, he's for sure capable of anything. I mean, he's probably a moment away from murder at like any moment, you know. That was kind of the feeling I got from him, especially in that thing, you know, where he's going up and down the stairs of his brother's apartment. I'm like, this guy is going to murder someone someday. Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, I the fact that he's going to be in jail, you know, for the rest of his life, hopefully now. Oh shit! Spoiler alert! Right?
We already mentioned it. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, where are we? The LAPD reopened the Susan Berman case, right?
Right.
And then he got arrested for guns because they thought he was going to flee.
Yeah.
This is maybe
in New Orleans, right? Yeah.
But in New Orleans, they caught him with a duffel bag that had a mask, guns, cash. I think pot, because he seems to love marijuana, and maybe even a dress.
Every
or two.
Time he has weed.
Yeah, he always seems to have a lot of weed.
He always has a huge bag of weed, and yet he's never been
arrested.
Oh,
arrested and like charge him with like felony possession at some point, guys.
I know, he slips through everything.
That's the fucking weirdest thing about it. Like they're always talking about we got him with guns and weed, and it's like if you got a black dude with guns and weed, that guy would be federal up the ass. Like that would he. Would be gone. Every count they could get, they'd be like, you are in federal prison. Yeah.
That's reminding me that he has property in Humboldt. And when the Susan Berman thing happened, they had that tracking him to flying to the Arcata airport. And they're trying to tie him to some missing people in Arcata. And like that's also like maybe where he's getting his weed, possibly.
Yeah.
That is like a big weed town. That's just a guess.
That is
on
a big
part.
Weed town.
But I actually didn't know about the weed thing so much. Like it seemed like so below guns in my mind.
And
that
murder.
I didn't even think about.
Yeah.
Like that's not a very chill way to handle your life.
Yeah. That is kind of weird. Like,
so, like that's not
usually
what
people...
I would think medicinal marijuana is supposed to chill you out.
I mean,
think of what you do without it.
Yeah.
What
seriously.
He's capable without the getting.
The weed is just so he can like keep down the murders to once every few years.
Does it also destroy the white parts of your eyes if you smoke too much weed?
Yeah, maybe.
Are purely people.
Yeah, just all dude.
The
so,
black oil from X-Files has seeped into
dude.
That.
How weird is that though?
That
right?
is weird, right?
Like his
he's dilated like Mr. Burns.
Yeah, he had this huge Mr. Burns eyes, and someone said an interesting theory, which was that he was wearing contacts to make him look doe-eyed.
Whoa!
And it would explain the blinking. Because he's constantly doing this
twitchy
blink, which is what and in watching that interview, every time he would do the nervous twitchy blink or he would have like a little face thing, I was like, this is the all of his tics were so like almost stereotypical murderous human being that I was like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. I was just so happy to watch.
Great documentaries seem to like turn the lights, camera, action, and it seems stereotypical. It seems like one of those things like you couldn't write this.
Right.
Because people would say it's just too unbelievable.
Yeah, too unbelievable. This character is too obvious.
Yeah.
You know, you have to make him, you have to make the contrast between his heinous acts and the type of person he is be like, he needs to be a very normal, nice talking person.
Like Christian Bale in American Psycho.
Exactly.
You know, like
that it's the contrast that makes it like a character interesting. Yeah. But just watching just a bona fide, pure, to the T stereotypical murderous human being, it's great.
He fits a T. I mean, come on.
It's so great to just like, and the way he talks. And I don't know, I related a little bit to, or not related, but I recognize the character a little bit too much. Like, I don't know, he reminded me of some of my relatives, and not in like a murderous way, but just
like the affectless kind of way.
Well, also the constant complaining and also the accent, you know. My relatives in New Jersey who are
my mother was never nice to me, and then she fell off a building, and I started murdering dogs.
But like they don't say those things, you know. I don't know, just the way he spoke, and all that, it just reminded me of...
That's funny.
I don't know.
So apparently the documentary left out the fact that there were policemen and firemen when his mom jumped off the roof. It wasn't just his dad saying, come watch this. Oh. And his mom doing it solo, swan style. Like, there was a whole cadre of emergency...
There's police reports about it, right?
Yeah.
Well, see, that's Andrew Jarecki dropping the ball then.
Yeah.
That's an example of one where he could have gone like, what do you mean you didn't know she was going to jump? Like, there were, you didn't notice the policemen and the firemen and stuff?
That's strange. I mean, you know, like, apparently they left out some pretty interesting information that would have swayed. Because, you know, they want you to like the guy at the beginning. They want you to have some empathy for him. Because, I mean, that's the beautiful thing about documentaries is they have prejudice, you know, and they can sway you. Like Michael Moore's documentaries, he make you feel one way or another. And that's why I liked about this documentary, because I thought, like, it was a very well-told story. Because you're always just like, I watched one episode and I was like, next, let's.
And that's the thing, is it's kind of like the documentaries have the capacity to be evil, you know, too. And that's the thing, is like you kind of have to trust the filmmaker to be as objective as possible, but to tell you the truth of the matter, you know, honestly, they needed. It was good for them to paint him in that kind of sympathetic light, almost because they were almost monkeying or copying what the lawyers would do in his murder trial in Texas. Like, this is the type of family he grew up in. These are the horrible circumstances he grew up with, and you know, by the end of that trial episode, actually, even I was a little bit like,
yeah,
I guess they can't disprove
right that exactly
it was self-defense.
He's kind of magical. He's like an evil unicorn. It seems like he has so many multiple personalities, and I'm sure that one has gotten away with lots of stuff in the past by being a little, like, you know, funny and menschy.
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out. Like, they didn't really address, like, mental health stuff, which other things I've been reading online are like, oh, maybe he's schizophrenic, there could be all these other things. And obviously, like, there was a couple things that didn't get delved into as much. The cross-dressing thing I want to kind of address in a way where I'm glad it didn't get exploitative and really dig into it. But it is, like, now there's been stuff coming out in theories about that was one of his ways of, like, not, you know, just basically hiding his gender so people would think that he was safer, you know. Like, some of the people that he may have disappeared, it's tied to this thing where he was dressed as a woman. Having the mask is very creepy too.
The mask is very smart. I mean, all of these things, they're so obvious and transparent when you think of it. Like, you know, people would ask him, you know, why the dressing up like a woman, or why the wig and stuff, and he'd be like, because it's a disguise. You know? And you go, oh right, yeah. Why the mask? Well, because it would look like I'm someone else, and when the cameras picked up who did it, it would look like another person. Yeah. It's like all these obvious things. Yeah, right. Like, of course he has a mask. You know, the guy is like diabolical.
Yes, he is diabolical. Exactly. And have you heard the theory of Morris Black possibly being his co-killer?
Oh,
a co-serial killer.
I have not heard that, but that is interesting.
It's on Reddit, so take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah. So
from the woman who is a private investigator,
Bobby Baca.
That's her theory, or that she's put forth, is, and it kind of could make sense. Like, how come all of a sudden there's evidence? Oh, maybe Morris was the one that knew how to, like, dispose of things better. Like, maybe maybe they had a weird, like, dual, you know, tag team.
Interesting. So, but what that does is it says it goes along with the theory that he's murdered countless others.
Which is, it's circulating on the internet. It's easy to, like, it's just, you know, the internet is where all the conspiracies for everything comes from.
Right.
So everyone's got, like, some kind of theory.
Is there evidence that Morris Black and Robert knew each other anywhere anytime, anywhere else, ever?
Well, who knows what's true? There's like people putting comments like, oh, I used to know that guy and he mentioned having a millionaire friend. I guess I should have paid more attention. I'm like, wow. Who are you? You're some anonymous internet guy. So, I mean, we're bringing in some stuff that's just internet speculation, but I feel like that's what's going to happen after the lifespan of like a true crime thing.
And that's kind of, it's kind of a bummer too, because like I felt like Jarecki did such an amazing job of, you know, because there's been all this stuff I've been reading after the fact. The dogs that he's killed, mm-hmm. and the, you know, possible other murders, the Long Island prostitute murders and stuff like that. And, you know, all these things that Jarecki, I think, deliberately ignored to not make it cluttered with conspiracy theories, right. or theories that they couldn't corroborate anything, yeah. you know.
Three murders is plenty.
Yeah, three murders is plenty. And you've got motive for all three. It right. makes sense. One of them, he literally did kill the guy. Yeah. He's admitted to it.
There was a timing issue with Pirro about when they were trying to get in touch with Susan Berman, though, because mm-hmm. supposedly they didn't try to reach out to her till after. That was one thing.
After she died?
Yeah, I think that was one thing. Like, it wasn't like there wasn't...
No, the documentary... It might have been the same article that... The documentary said that it was right before.
Yeah.
But was the documentary wrong? Or?
Well, there was this article that came out on Vulture, which was Things They Got Wrong, which is by the guy who wrote the 2003 biography of Durst. And I think that was one of the points in there, was there was some timing difference on that, which could still be... I mean, still, the motive's still there. But it like it might have been like something to bolster the documentary's like perspective.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, it matters that timing. Mm-hmm. Like then it gives motive. Otherwise, it's possible that he could have just assumed that she was going to rat, but that doesn't.
For me, what I thought was really odd about the documentary was her son's. Relationship with
Susan Berman's son, right?
Yeah, with Robert Durst.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Even after knowing that he had admitted to killing Morris Black and chopping him up, there's that video of them like sharing a smoke,
right? Yeah,
and hanging out and chilling, and
he paid for his college, or something like that.
Well, I mean, yeah, I remember thinking like, I wonder when the video of him just hanging out with Robert Durst. You know, having a smoke. I wonder when that was taken. Like, was that taken after the letter?
The letter? Oh.
Or before? I mean,
that was before the letter, for sure, because he changed his whole attitude.
He changed his tune.
Well, right, but also I was looking, when I watched it again, I was looking to see what his facial expression was, and he looked... It was almost expressionless. It looked like, So it's very possible that it could have been...
Like B-roll that they shoved in there?
Right. I don't know why they would have done it at a separate time. I mean, also, I think in the timeline of what happened after that, subsequently, you don't have... what's his name? You know, all of a sudden they can't reach Robert. You know? So I don't know if maybe the guy... alerted him to the letter. No, obviously he didn't. But anyways, the point is that relationship was weird. At the same time, you know, I did empathize with like the guy is paying for his college, right. and people are. Well, I don't know what it is about him that makes you believe in coincidences, but like most normal people, if someone said, this guy has been accused in the past of murder, and now he's, you know, murdered again and whatnot, and for most of you, you'd be like, oh, yeah, no one gets accused of murder twice and didn't, or doesn't mess around with the wrong people or anything like that. But for some reason with him, everyone's willing to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. I feel like it's his frame. Like, he's so tiny.
Yeah, you would think,
there's no way, like, I could beat him up. There's no way he could kill me.
Right.
And his, like, nervous kind of Jewish, menschy kind of, like, Woody Allen-esque thing.
Exactly.
Like, he's nerdy.
Well, you know, I wasn't even there. You know, of course I loved my wife.
And it's, you're like, there's no, I mean, like, he can't hurt a fly. Like,
yeah, I mean, people even mentioned it. That was actually an interesting thing at the very first episode. I remember when they finally show the first picture of Robert Durst.
Oh, yeah. The cops are like, what? This guy?
Right. The cops started saying, like, I looked at him. I was like, this guy couldn't hurt a fly. Yeah. Like, this guy looks. And I remember looking at the picture and going, like, I don't know what you're talking about. It looks like a guy. It looks like a guy who, because we just saw a picture. He saw the person.
Right.
And I remember then you watch him being interviewed and you go, it's not so much about just his face alone or whatever. It's about the way he talks, the way he walks, his movement.
Yeah.
Like, there's something about him that does make you think he's this meek.
Right, right. Like his sweaters and his khaki pants.
Yeah. I mean, he just doesn't look, he looks gentle. He looks like he yells a lot or something.
Seems like a yeller.
He does not look like a cold-blooded killer.
I think there's also something in this country where you're like, if you have $100 million, why would you do something like that? And like, we have this thing about class. It's like, if you're that rich, why would you take any of those chances? But as now we see with Aaron Hernandez, who I think is probably a serial killer as well. I mean, they think he's killed 4 people at this point.
See, that I didn't know. I had only known that he was just recently convicted and is going to do life in prison.
And then they're going to take him up to Boston, and they think he killed 2 guys up there as well.
Now, who was the person he was convicted of killing? Lloyd. Is who?
His last name's Lloyd. It's his fiance's sister.
Now,
boyfriend.
Why did he kill? What's the motive?
Something about they got into a fight at a club, and I think Lloyd was probably saying either don't step out on my sister, my girlfriend's sister. Like, you know, he's cheating on his fiance or doing something that he was like, why would you do that? So they basically were like, don't disrespect me ever again, and then shot him in the head.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, they have camera evidence of him having a gun on his property and then texting his fiance, like, get rid of the box, you know, emoji wink, you know, kind of thing.
This guy's a football guy?
Yeah, he was.
I missed this whole story.
He's
from the Patriots. He's just signed to a $40 million contract. They think he killed 2 other people in Boston as well.
So that's crazy. I didn't know that. I knew that he was going to jail or going to prison for murder. I mean, it is kind of crazy to think, like, if you have money, like, why would you risk?
Why?
Especially if you didn't come from money. See, I understand Robert Durst's thing way more than Aaron
Hernandez. Because he came from cash.
Right. Because, like, to him, not having money is not an option even.
Right.
You know, it's like he could not have money by, like, abandoning everyone and he loves and – or not loves, but abandoning his family. But he's always got that – safety net in his head, you know? Like, I don't think money was ever a concern for him. Whereas, like, Aaron Hernandez, who the fuck knows? I mean, especially if he's a serial killer, I don't even know. That's crazy.
I mean, people kill for different reasons, obviously.
Sure.
And that the label serial killer, it kind of conjures up this guy in the bushes who's, like, killing people because of some, like, desire of... Like,
right, with a mask.
With
like,
a
scream mask on and a knife, you know? Yeah.
But then there's, like, he's basically a hitman, you know?
Right.
Like, in Aaron Hernandez's case, he's just, like, killing people that have been disrespecting him. So, like...
Yeah.
I just think it's interesting about money, what you put on, like, a label that we put on somebody because of how they look, and then, like, we find out that there's... should maybe a trail of bodies.
Sure.
Like the girl who apparently went missing in Connecticut that Robert Durst owned that health food store.
Right.
That she would go to and
now she's
gone. But like, I don't know, like watching it, I'm just like, his wife's gone. His best friend's gone. The guy he admitted to killing is gone.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Like what is going on in this thing?
I mean, he's definitely a serial killer. I mean, because he at least killed 3 people, you know? I mean, there's not, you know, obviously he's not been convicted of murdering anyone, but that's besides the point. I mean, he's not, and mostly because I'm just one of those guys who does not give the benefit of the doubt to people. I bet if I met
there
Robert
Durst.
There
was no murder investigation with Kathy Durst, right? There was never a murder investigation.
She just
disappeared. And you know, everyone was like, yeah, I mean, it wasn't until after the fact that the, you know, detectives seemed like, well, they felt like they were duped, you know?
I like the, well, I don't like it, but I thought it was interesting. They talked about perhaps a place that he could have taken her body was the Pine Barrens in New Jersey.
Right, which is
one of my favorite Sopranos.
That's the best Sopranos episode ever. Yeah, the one where Polly loses his shoe.
Lose the Russian.
Oh, that one.
I love that. And then they find the van and they're eating mustard packets and stuff.
And they wrap up in the carpet and stuff.
Yeah, that's that is.
The first episodes I saw.
I think Buscemi directed that episode.
Yes, I remember it was like, maybe it was Steve Buscemi directed it. And like, I think like Matthew Weiner, or maybe it was Terrence
Van Patten.
Or Tim Van Patten.
Oh, Tim Van Patten, yeah.
Who is the one? That's my favorite episode of The Sopranos as well. It's so good.
HBO should stop ISIS.
Once
that's
again,
what I say.
HBO.
They're the best, you guys.
HBO should run for president.
Yeah, absolutely. They would fix this country. You know,
No Hulu for president.
Yeah,
right. Hulu.
Yeah.
So you've watched each episode twice now. So.
Yeah.
And it's only been out for a month at this
I guess
recording.
So, yeah. It hasn't been a lot.
And what have you taken away from it? Like, what is your impact? What kind of impact did it have on you?
I mean, for me, it surprised me in, number one, like I was saying before, that money for a lawyer is super important. That a good lawyer goes the longest way in pretty much getting you out of anything.
Right.
I mean, if you've got a good lawyer, you can get out of murder. Yeah. You know, that's incredible to me. But it also it made murder seem easy, which was kind of weird to me.
Yeah, like in the '80s, maybe it was.
I think there was a time. Nowadays, I think it's so much harder with smartphones and with just everything. There's like GPS coordination on wherever you're at. Like right now. Like Google knows where I am because I put in my phone the map to this house.
Right.
On my way here, I was like, just make sure where it is. So if I murdered you guys, they'd be like, well, where?
There's
you know,
a podcast.
Yeah, there was a podcast. And also, there would
and
be
he
a
podcast. Yeah.
And I just, yeah.
Right. Wait, then I think we've got the gimmick.
Yeah, right.
How much are you willing to do for ratings?
Exactly. Yeah. Do you guys want to make some podcast money or not?
That good
podcast.
Yeah,
we'll sell a lot of Audible subscriptions.
Yeah. Get your SupDoc t-shirts.
RIP. One episode.
I went on SupDoc and all I got was murdered.
Yeah. But yeah, I think back in the day, because you think about it, and it was just, you didn't know where people were.
You can't be like a drifter anymore. Like when I saw The Master, I'm like, oh, you could just be like a drifter in the.
You could just be off the grid by just walking away at any point. You know, where did this person go? I don't know.
That reminds me, did we ever figure out what happened with the, and this is more San Francisco specific, but there was that insane thing a few months ago.
Oh, the body parts.
A suitcase full of body parts.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy got put in prison, and he was just like a drifter in the Tenderloin. And again, it was a thing. It was like, I just took care. I didn't kill anyone.
His roommate's missing.
I think that's what they maybe put together, yeah.
Right.
And then he died, I think.
And he died.
Yeah, he died.
Suicide or something.
He killed himself or he was killed in prison? I forget which one.
No, he was released because they didn't have enough evidence.
Oh, yes. He released.
And then he went and admitted himself to the hospital because he wasn't feeling well and he died at General.
That's insane.
That is insane.
That was a
so that was probably
case.
Robert Durst, right?
Probably Robert Durst, been yeah. Him.
I did not tell the whole truth. Nobody tells the whole truth.
New and alarming questions are being raised about what happened to a young wife and medical student here in New York some 20 years ago.
Now with the case being reopened, certain things come to the surface.
When Kathy went missing, Susan Berman protected Bobby from the press.
I said, whatever you do, interview Susan Berman. She knows more than she's saying.
Susan Berman was found shot dead.
The first person I thought of was Robert Durst.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV?
Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
So let's talk about the final episode and the final moment about him going to the bathroom. And, you know, I thought it was odd because they do show at one point them telling him, his lawyer says, your mic is hot. They can hear you,
it's
right?
Genius. Yeah. I loved that.
Yeah.
That was foreshadowing.
It was foreshadowing, it was exactly.
Great.
And it also, I think what they're setting up is like he's not as smart maybe as people think. Like he doesn't always, he's not always going 100% with the I murder people and I have to get away with it kind of thing.
Right, sure.
He is that smart and he wants to get caught. What do you think?
Oh, interesting. You're postulating that maybe he was ready to get caught.
Well, he's peeing on candy. He's stealing hoagies.
He's doing an interview.
He's doing
which
interviews.
He hasn't done in decades.
I mean, that's the thing. Him wanting to get caught, I think, like that kind of wanting to get caught mentality, I think only goes so far because if he really wanted to, get caught. I mean, he could just admit it. You know what I mean? He could just go, yeah, I murdered these.
But some people, especially with, I would think with multiple personalities, they can't. It's like an alcoholic can't just walk into his family and say, I'm an alcoholic.
Right.
Like, they need someone to come to them and say, you're an alcoholic.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you're right. I don't know. I personally, I kind of, I took him for an old man who is, he's sly, but I could totally see him going to the bathroom and being like, what the hell did I do? And kill them all, of course. Like that whole thing.
Of course.
Of course. I felt like him even saying that, to me, that wasn't even, like, that's not, all that's not admissible. It's not evidence of anything.
Right.
It's not an actual admission.
It is a public opinion. It's like basically in the, it's not legally binding.
There's no way he can be convicted off that alone.
Right.
For me, the Beverly Hills misspelling and the handwriting analysis, like to me, that was
the block letters.
That's what got him.
Yeah,
and I thought that was the most interesting part. I thought you saw a real reaction. And that to me is when I was like, this is the best thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah.
You saw an actual reaction to someone getting caught, caught in a lie. He's like burping and he's,
My favorite thing about that is like when you were a kid and your mom would be like, what is that? And as a kid, you're just like, I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
And she's like, you're the only one that was playing with ketchup.
And right.
There's a big ketchup stain.
And my reaction would be like, exactly like his. I could see how you would think that because of this that I would be the one who dropped the ketchup on the floor.
Sure, I could see that.
I understand why, but you know what? A lot of coincidences have happened in this household. You know, the disappearance of my wife. You know,
so I kind of feel like his reaction to that was exactly it was, and in terms of like the way what a lawyer would tell him to do.
Yeah,
you know. Not admitting anything. He was just going, right. Yeah, I could see how you'd think that. And
right.
It's like, well, what do you have to say about that? Well, I don't know. You know, that's the thing. It's like he's not admitting anything, but that is exactly the look.
Well,
and
you
the,
see it in his eyes. Something happened in his eyes.
The demeanor of, oh. And then like the first thing he said is, oh, there it is. You're caught. Like, I was like,
yeah,
this is amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
It's pretty damning. Now, the there it is, you're caught. I killed him, of course. That stuff is not admissible, but for sure, he knows he's caught when he sees the misspelling, and then they point out, can you tell me which one
is
the one you wrote? And he was like, because yeah. he thought about yeah. making a decision, and then yeah. he said, "I bet my lawyers would be really mad
yeah.
if I chose the wrong one." You know, right. and he's like, "I don't want to take that chance."
Well, that's the one episode where they really revealed their process as filmmakers.
And yeah,
how much. Like it goes into the order of the questions,
sure.
The, yeah. how they're trying to pattern the emotional impact mm-hmm. of here's a photo of you and Susan. Here's a photo of you know.
They played them perfectly yeah. too,
and then that's the one where you see Jarecki in it the most,
right?
And the other producers,
yeah.
And that's to me, even though yes, obviously we want to find out if this, he did this. It does. It's like where this has gone beyond. It's never been a dispassionate
right.
Documentary, but it's just like injecting yourself in that much. Like Michael Moore hasn't like tried to solve a murder, you know?
No.
Right.
Like, so it's like where, how it's not even, I guess it's not unethical or anything.
Uh-huh.
It just makes it a different feeling episode from the rest of the episode.
Absolutely. It's incredible. Yeah.
But you see, that's the thing is I really,
like you, what you were saying about Serial is fully going on in that.
True, and but I think the difference, I think where it's different mm-hmm. is they have at that point some seriously damning evidence,
yeah.
And they're like, guys, we have our moment. Our what's the like. You know, name of the, it's like there's
Seb or whatever.
That TV show, no, but that TV show where you know that a lot of people watch. You know, like in the courtroom, I forget the name of the show.
Downton Abbey.
Well, yeah, sure, it's the Downton Abbey moment. No, that moment, you know, that where you know someone goes, you know, in a lawyer old. Lawyer show where someone goes, then why is your signature on the dead
Perry Mason? Yeah.
Perry Mason, yeah. That's it. That Perry Mason moment.
Oh, right.
You know, like you they said, guys, we have a fucking Perry Mason moment. We have to get this.
Yeah.
And like to me, that's different than the whole thing being centered around Jarecki and about like, you know, I decided. You know, I was gonna. You know, it was more like they just told a story of. You see, the thing is Jarecki is a part of the story in that he made the movie, and Robert Durst reached out to him, and I felt like that was there was something about that it was okay because it wasn't because Jarecki reached out to him and said, I want to do this interview because I want people to hear my side of the story, and I feel like when he had that Perry Mason moment, he was like, I can't not be the guy who does this.
Yes,
like, this is my thing.
Yeah.
And also, I have to admit, there's part of me that has enough kind of distaste for the Vice documentary that I was glad to see someone do another type of, you know, documentary on HBO and just crush it and then have the Vice documentaries all look dumb again.
Right. So, like, so Sarah Kaufman, that's the guy's name, the son
Sarah,
of Susan.
That's
or the stepson. And if he had given that letter to the cops, would that case have been reopened at that time? But would he just have gotten away with it at the time? I think the point was he's going to expose him publicly so he can't just run away and like buy his way out of this this time. Well, I mean, because he had that letter for what, like a year?
Well, I mean,
more than a year. Did he let the letter go after the documentary came out?
The documentary seemed to. When you say he, you mean
Jarecki? Yeah.
No, I think from what
it was in a post. It was like in a safe deposit box.
From what I heard, the Jarecki went once he got the letter. This is what I heard. I've heard that the police, LAPD, have known about the letter now for. Like a year or something.
Okay.
And so what that says to me is Jarecki gave him this piece of evidence and said, this is probably something you guys want to, you know, figure out. And they were like, all right, well, cause they're building a case, you know, I'm pretty sure there's like, you know, they're using RICO to try to get this guy,
right.
You know, he's not just, you know, they're not just trying to tie him to this one murder and you know, and they certainly don't want to jump to, trial without being prepared because they don't want to let him get away again. So I think they had the evidence and they're like, all right, we're going to continue to build evidence because they're police and police are like, no, we're building a fucking case, you know? So Jarecki then, you know, the timing of the arrest in New Orleans, that to me, was obviously the weirdest part because it was like it coincided with the last episode.
Yeah.
But maybe that also makes sense. Maybe Robert Durst is watching the show as it's airing and he's going, I got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, well, they're thinking he was going to flee and get the fuck out of there.
I mean, it's surprising he didn't flee.
I know.
When he, with the Beverly Hills letter.
I know, with all that money.
When he saw that, yeah.
But that's why I think he just wants to get caught. I think.
There's
something to that. I mean, it's if we're believing that he's got, like, some kind of mental illness that's driving a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
And they're, yeah, like, if it's schizophrenia, if it's something where there is maybe not guilt per se, but just maybe he wants to be like, he wants the recognition of how smart he was.
Sure, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
It could be that, and which is like the Bond villain way. Yeah. Like, it'd be insane if that's what it was, but everything involving him has been nuts. I mean, if I was his wife, I would be the most worried.
Well,
she knows where all that secrets are. And did she back off of him finally, or what happened with Sheraton? That's her.
Yeah, Sheraton lady seems to be equally insane, but of course she's not equally insane.
No.
I don't think she's a murderer, but I think she knows what the fuck Robert is.
But could you even write, I mean, that character is so incredible.
Yeah.
That her whole, like, Manhattan, uptight, like, whole, and then apparently she's a slumlord.
Yeah, so they owned...
Surprise.
Well, Durst obviously, like, still owned a ton of properties all over New York, and so him and his wife had the company that were managing the properties, and there's, like, all these... I can't remember what article it was. If I find it, we'll put it in the show notes, but there was an article about how... they were slumlords.
Yeah.
And like they're just bought all these properties and flipped them.
Yeah.
And like the profits they were making off of that. So she was running that stuff. She was a very ambitious real estate person before she even met him.
Right.
And then the article, so this article in the New York Times article is about her. And this came out on March 31st. So, yeah, she's finally, I think, backing away from him. I'm not really sure what's...
Well, I mean, at this point, she'd be crazy not to. But here's the thing.
But she can't testify against him.
Right. That's the thing. She's protected herself. She's a smart cookie. Like, she's protected herself against ever testifying against him. And thus protected herself from ever getting murdered by him. And I think as soon as... he was arrested. Now, you know, you're talking about her backing off. Mm-hmm. The reason for that is she's like, all right, she feels a little bit safer now that he's behind bars, at least for now, because I'm sure, you know, her plot to marry him, you know, and whatnot had to do with, I mean, maybe money, of course, obviously that's a thing, but also like if, legally, she does not have to testify against him, then she doesn't have to worry about ending up like Susan Berman.
Right, yeah. Know? Well, and I'm like, how many strap-ons does she owe?
Oh, my God.
You know, like,
know.
That...
She's got balls. And she it was so funny just listening to her talk, watching her. She was also fascinating. And I wish they actually spent more time on her. But I also felt like the reason they weren't is it would be irresponsible to, you know, implicate her.
Yeah.
When all they have on her is she's just a scumbag who knows that Robert is a murderer.
Yeah.
Like, she, you know, being a scumbag doesn't make her a murderer or an accomplice.
No, just a scumbag.
Just a scumbag.
Right, which is bad enough. Let's end with, I have just a couple questions for you. For one, I want to know your feeling behind the title. And what do you think that is?
Well, so the Jinx is okay. So obviously they mention once in the show.
Mm-hmm.
They say, you know, he didn't want to have kids because he felt like he would be a jinx to them, like he would be bad luck. And it's a interesting title because you know, he's obviously bad luck to anyone who's ever gotten close to him, you know?
Including dogs.
Yeah, dogs, wives, fucking
candy,
best friends.
Yeah.
CVS's. yeah, it's an interesting title. It is also a title that you're kind of just like, I definitely had to push myself to kind of make connections, like also maybe a jinx in that, like maybe maybe he has a jinx in that, like, it's...
Friends keep dying.
All my friends keep dying, and it looks like I did it, you know? Like, yeah, so I mean...
Oh, this microphone's still on.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I had to make that interpretation, you know, I had to jump to that. It's an interesting title.
It is. I
like it.
I do, too.
It's one of those titles that you kind of just... you can think about for a bit and whatnot. And I was glad he said something about with the word jinx.
At first I thought it was a little flippant, but then I was like, oh, wait, this has more connotation than that. And, like, do you have any...
No, I don't think I have any closing thoughts about that. I just... where is Morris Black's head, guys?
Right.
That's, like, the swimming one the thing he managed to get away with, and no one in that trial was like, well, where's the head?
Yeah.
You know? Like, well, I'm sure they asked.
Yeah.
But where did he get rid of a head?
He
did such a bad job with the rest of it. Where is the head?
It's back to, did he want to get caught?
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah. I'm forgetting the name, but the Showtime Dexter. It's so Dextery where he did the same thing. Like, mm-hmm. I wonder if they somehow, the writers had read about.
Wait, are you spoiling Dexter for me now? Is that how Dexter ends?
No,
he wanted to get caught.
Spoiling. And my final thing I want to ask you, though, is it sounds like you're a big documentary fan. So do you have a documentary that you think people should watch?
Oh, yeah.
Like one of your favorites.
Yeah.
God.
I know there's tons.
I don't know. Let me think. A documentary that everyone...
It's not an ISIS beheading video.
I mean, that's not also... I mean, the most recent documentary I saw is the Scientology one, the Going Clear one, and that's on HBO, of course, and it's amazing. And that's a great one. I would recommend that one. I'm trying to think if there's one that's like...
And your top...
Not like, HBO.
One that you've seen throughout your life that you just love. That's what I'm thinking.
I really love it's a rockumentary. I really like The Devil and Daniel Johnston.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
That's
such a beautiful doc.
It is one of my absolute favorites. Like that, it to me is...
When he's crying and playing, and I think it's South by Southwest.
Austin City Limits something like that. Maybe it was South by Southwest at that point. But yeah, he's crying and playing. He's having a breakdown, and then he, you know, tries to kill him and his family.
Once again, spoiler alert, but when his dad's telling the story about how he wrestled the plane, he had to wrestle the plane from him.
Yeah, it's an insane documentary. What's amazing about that documentary is the fact that Daniel Johnston, so it's a documentary about this artist, this musician Daniel Johnston, who was a singer-songwriter, mm-hmm. and he did everything really lo-fi, recorded on tapes and stuff, and he also is bipolar, and had a bunch of nervous breakdowns, a bunch of manic episodes, blah, blah, blah. It's fascinating, especially because he's taped himself, he had a video camera with him from a very young age, you know, from like, you know, high school and whatnot. So you see, the documentary is filled with his entire life. You see, you know, clips of him as a little kid. You see clips of him middle school, high school, and you see him developing, you know, and his mind kind of... him losing touch with reality. It's and of course he has tons of recordings of his voice, him talking about things. He's also got grand illusions too. So you know, him talking into a microphone is like, you know, because he's important, right?
Yeah.
So that's probably one of my favorite documentaries
great.
Of all time.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
So I want to thank our guest Matt Lieb.
Yeah.
Thanks, Matt Lieb.
And George Chen.
Thanks.
And Pac Romaine. You've been listening to SupDoc. This is episode 1. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you guys soon.
Thanks for listening.
You can find more episodes of SupDoc, show notes, updates, and more at supdocpodcast.com.
We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at SupDocPodcast.
If you have comments, corrections, or want to suggest a documentary, email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.
The show is listener supported. You can donate to the show at patreon.com/supdocpodcast.
If you can't donate financially, please subscribe, comment, or tell a friend about SupDoc.
We'd like to thank Documentary News for their ongoing support.
SupDoc is produced by Will Scoville.
Our theme music is by David Siegel. And this is a special Mayhem remix from listener Kevin Coulson.